Folks, the best value at Manager Tools is to buy an annual license to our material. For $200 a year, you get access to show notes for every single show produced, over 100 a year, plus our entire archive of nearly 1,000 shows. You wouldn't want to print it out all in one place. It'd be a management Wikipedia, and it'd be probably 5,000 pages. You get all that, plus access to Things I Think, and even more powerfully, the interview creation tool, which may be our strongest and most least known digital tool that we have, and more digital tools to come in the future, available only to licensees. Ask another licensee. They'll tell you it is the best value they have.
Welcome to Manager Tools. Leading Change, the Orkhart, Chapter 1. Here we go. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but it certainly happened to me. You know, rolling out change to organization and finding out that not everyone on my team wants to go along with every change that I want to create, right?
Why don't they just make it easy, right? But nope, they can't do it.
Yeah, well, and after a while you find out that, luckily, you don't have to win everyone over, right?
Yeah, and that's probably the key to this cast, the Orkhart analogy. Yeah, too many young managers make the mistake of thinking that consensus, you know, that everybody has a vote, that it should be a democracy, or that why wouldn't I try to get everybody on board? And this is just a bad analogy. It's not a democracy. Consensus is not something to be striven for. And thinking about your people differently based on how they feel about the change you're trying to implement makes your job a lot easier and actually increases the chances that your change process will happen and happen well.
That's right. And if a consensus and getting everybody on board is the standard, you're going to quickly become frustrated as a manager and you're going to stop leading change. You're going to sit back in your laurels. Not because you want to, but it's just so hard, right? The whole running in oatmeal kind of analogy.
And here's the hidden gem of this cast that a lot of people won't get, and I didn't get the first few times I understood the Orkhart years ago. If you approach change in a situation where you have to get everybody on board, and some people know that you're going to spend a lot of time with them, there will be people who will take the position 1, 2, 3, in order to block you all the time so they can sap your energy away from where the levers truly are. They know if they're against the change that every minute you spend with them is a minute not spent with everybody else and therefore the people who can be won over. And so they take the position in order to sabotage things. They just say no.
There are people like that out there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, there are.
Yeah, good. All right. Okay, so look, here's our outline for the cast. Three parts. First of all, I want to explain the Orkhart analogy. Secondly, obviously, what you'll do then is figure out where everyone on your team is relative to the analogy, the cart. And then lastly, the key to this cast, don't waste much time on your naysayers. Don't waste time on those people who are pulling against you. You don't have to get everybody on board. It'd be great if you did. It'd be great if everybody goes along, but they don't. Take it from old hands who have been managing for 30 years. They don't. And you're going to have to change how you allocate your time using the Orkhart in order to be more effective more often.
Okay, good. What's the Orkhart analogy?
Yeah. So I mean, first of all, just a wee bit of background here. The problem with change is not that you don't have time for the change, if that's all you had to do, but you have to lead change while also getting the rest of your work done, and it's not easy. And what ends up happening is too many of us to spend too little time on the communication of, the persuasion of, the change effort itself. You know, we have to develop the change. We have to communicate it. We have to provide training. Maybe we have to measure it. We have to follow up. We have to internalize it with reporting. And because we're busy, we spend too little time on the implementation, and it ends up taking longer and being messier and less impactful than we originally thought. And the reason that a lot of us spend too much time is we have this mistaken impression I alluded to before. Most of us don't want to be an autocrat who avoids collaboration. And, you know, there are times where you have to be in charge. But generally speaking, we want to use role power, persuasive power, we want to use relationship power, which requires persuasion, rather than role power, which requires authority.
I thought for a second there I was going to have to disagree with you. It's like, oh, yeah. God, okay, oh, yeah. Wow, what are we doing here?
Go right for the roll power. Kaboom. Game of Thrones. Boom. Yeah. But hopefully you don't do that. Don't use roll power too much. The problem isn't usually that for most of us we're too autocratic. Too many of us go too far the other way and think, basically, the mentality is, oh, gosh, I've got to get everybody completely on board to roll something out. But what most of us, I certainly didn't know this before I learned about the org chart, is great change managers, people who are good at turning things around, people who are good at setting a vision and following through, don't try to win over everybody. They don't. They spend time on those team members who are most likely to contribute, and they actually try to minimize the impact of those who disagree. If they're going to be thinking about the naysayers, they're actually working just to mute them rather than and to keep them from talking to everybody else rather than trying to win them over, because they know it will take five times as long, and even if you do to win them over, and even if you do, they won't be as valuable as some of the people who are supporters. So here's how to think about your team members when you're planning change. Some of you, I suspect many of you, have already figured out the org chart analogy. Think of yourself as pulling an org chart. And I got to say here, in deference to a great movie, not the greatest, but a great movie.
Here we go.
This is an org chart just like the one Indiana Jones rode in that great action sequence in the mine, in the underground mine, in the third movie, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Now, that one, actually, I don't think it had a handle on it, but basically it's a cart that runs on rails that has a handle, kind of like a really tall industrial wagon, and you're pulling the cart.
By the way, for listeners who are new, if you've been here a while, you know that there is not a management story or lesson or theory or anything relative to management that cannot be compared to something in Indiana Jones. That's just the rule of horseman's rule of management.
Yeah, exactly. Stories. Exactly. Right along with in the first movie when he says, you know, I'm going to Cairo, meet me at Omar's. And he says, how? Fala, his friend Hafala, says, how? And he says, I don't know. I'm making this up as I go. That's the ultimate managerial line, right? People don't know what they're doing. And it still turns out okay for many of us. So you've got a hold of the handle of the cart, and you're trying to pull it down the track toward the change you envision occurring on your team. It's a heavy cart, and it's hard to move. And everybody on your team fits into the picture into one of three places relative to the cart. Your supporters, who also have a handle on the cart and are pulling along with you. That's one. Supporters actively helping you. They're actively helping you move in the direction you want the cart to go. They make your change effort easier. They volunteer. They step up. They support. They encourage. They give ideas. They offer extra time and so on. Your riders, who are actually in the cart, they're not helping you pull, but neither are they working against you. There's work to be done to get them where you want them, because they make the cart heavier, but they could become supporters, and it would be okay if everybody were in the cart. If nobody was working against you and the entire team was in the cart, you'd have to pull a little bit. You'd probably have to be a little bit more of an autocrat than you wanted, but riders are okay. It'd be good, you know, to try to communicate with them and do more to get one or two of them. If you've got 10 people in your team, to get one or two out of the cart and pulling makes an enormous difference, because they're no longer dead weight.
Right. There's guys out there who can, you know, big, strong guys that can tow by themselves a big airplane, right? So yeah. 747. So get somebody big enough and strong enough in the front, you're okay.
Yeah. Too much analogy there, dude. Okay. Too much. Nice. Strongest man in the world contest. Look, he's pulling a truck. Okay. That's one of those moments, guys, where we leave those moments in. If you don't know it, Mike and I have recorded for 10 years. We started this recording. It's a Saturday morning. I'm recording this with him. We're both at home. And I started when we got on the phone by saying, you know, I still like doing this. It's been 10 years. I still enjoy writing the cast. I still enjoy recording them. It's been the same every year for 10 years, and you would think we would get old, but it is not. We're more excited now than when we started in terms of the upside of what we're doing. But that's going to stay in here. And what I often tell people is, if a cast is 30 minutes long. It took us 30 minutes and 30 seconds to record it. There may be one small thing that's cut out, or, you know, somebody says something wrong and record it, but we essentially take first takes. We've recorded a couple of casts, haven't we? When we had total audio failure or something.
Exactly. But not because of we didn't say it right.
Or
we may not have said it right, but we didn't re-record it.
We didn't re-record it, right. So please don't send us mail telling us which cast we didn't do well on. Okay, so we've got supporters who are pulling the cart with us, and we've got riders who are in the cart. And then lastly, we've got naysayers. Okay, they're at the back of the cart actively pulling against you. They don't like the change. So they don't want the change, and they're privately and maybe, frankly, even publicly disagreeing with you, and maybe even trying to convince some writers to help them, help the naysayers, sabotage the efforts. In fact, a good friend of mine once said that your job as a manager is to keep the naysayers away from the writers. That's all, right? Just do that, right? Because in as much as a writer jumping out to become a supporter is great, a writer jumping out to become a naysayer is bad. Effective change managers will all tell you that you don't get the cart moving by getting everyone to pull on the handle with you. You get the cart moving by motivating your supporters and minimizing the effect of the naysayers, and of course, particularly on your riders. And that's the Orkhart analogy.
Good. Let me say something about naysayers real quick. I worry that some people will interpret what he says like these naysayers are just evil people who just want to thwart your efforts at every point, you know, at every turn. I mean, there are some evil people out there, but generally, that's not the case. Naysayers are fighting against your efforts because it impacts them negatively, right? There's an organizational change that is likely to happen that's going to impact them negatively. They're going to lose part of their organization. They're going to lose some responsibilities, or they're going to gain some responsibilities they don't want. So these are not evil people. Yeah.
They're going to have to work more with somebody they don't like.
That's right. Right. So there's all sorts of reasons why somebody's going to try to thwart your efforts. So, you know, anytime you make change, there's some people who are going to be positively impacted and negatively impacted from perspectives of workload and responsibilities and all that kind of stuff. And So anyway, I just want to make that clear.
And the reason why we call this chapter one is we're going to use the Orkhart analogy describing other things in the future about how you can approach it based on whether a person's a supporter or an naysayer. Another way to think about it is not whether somebody's evil, but also there are some people who are naturally predisposed to be comfortable with change and some people who are not.
Yeah.
For those of you who know DISC, D's and I's, your high D's and high I's, your forceful, assertive, pushy folks are more comfortable with change. It's one of the reasons why they tend to populate executive positions at higher percentages than a normal population sample. Whereas S's and C's, your reserved people, team person, or your perfectionist, your engineer, your software developer, and so on, are generally predisposed to leave things the way they are. They prefer the status quo. So a change, it starts out for S's and C's being bad. Not horrible, not to be avoided at all costs, but the initial response to from an S or a C is to say, I'm not comfortable with that. Whereas just the opposite with D's and I's, they go, oh, okay, something new, something better. So for S's and C's, their natural tendency is to be a bit of a naysayer. Now, that doesn't mean they won't be a supporter. They can absolutely become a supporter. And we don't recommend here that you completely abandon your naysayers. You owe them some modicum of communication and so on. And it happens quite a bit once you explain it to them from their point of view, you know, and we're about to recommend an internal pre-wire, they'll come along. They'll become a writer or a supporter. But you're right. It doesn't take evilness, and it's good to know what people's natural tendency is. And of course, that might all start with doing one-on-ones and getting to know the strengths and weaknesses and natural tendencies of your people. Just putting it out there.
Somebody ought to do a podcast about that.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that out of the way, what's the first step in using the Orkhart?
Yeah. We're going to allocate our limited time and energy. That's the whole point of management. You have limited time and energy. We're going to allocate that time to get the Orkhart moving. Rather than making the mistake of thinking everybody equally, we apportion our limited time based on the likelihood that our persuasive success with some of the team. So we break our team into the three groups. And there are two ways to do it that are both pretty simple. The easiest way is to simply use your best judgment based on your experience with each team member. This is much more likely if you've been a manager of a team for a year and you've been doing one-on-ones and you've paid attention, you've gotten to know them. Some of them, you know, are aligned with you. They generally agree with you and so on. Some, less so. And so the ones that are aligned with you, they become supporters. The ones that aren't, they become naysayers. Now, it's not just a generic one that everybody who's a naysayer now will be a naysayer in the future. As Mike said, depending upon the change, you want to think through the impact of the change on the team and take off your rose-colored glasses for a minute and analyze, okay, what are the negatives and positives? So it's a simple negative-positive chart for each of your team. Is this a good thing or a bad thing for him? And if somebody on your team who's naturally a high C, a bit of a reserved person, more of a perfectionist, analytical, not a heavy communicator, smart, effective, but not warm, not necessarily outgoing. If you know they're a perfectionist and this change involves them working with new people, changing the process, and having different metrics, dude, they're going to be a naysayer. And hopefully they'll come around. They're going to be a professional and they know that, particularly if this is a waterfall change, that it's not coming from you. You know, you want to consider them in the naysayer category to minimize the chances that you think they're going to be a supporter because you just layer up, you put a layer of happy time above everybody. Everybody's like, oh, everybody's going to love my change. That's not the case. But look, some people are aligned with you. Some are not. You think about the change. You think about them. You do a negative and positive chart, and you put them in one of the three categories. And look, if you can't be sure, put them in the middle to start until you have a chance to hear their views in a meeting or perhaps in a one-on-one. And there you go. We hope you're doing one-on-ones, folks. There's a cast for that.
This is all not that hard. It's just taking 5 minutes and thinking about it. I mean, literally, that is the step that most managers don't take, right? They think all these happy thoughts. Take 5 minutes and think about it, and it'll come to you pretty quickly.
Yeah, and the first time you do it, don't worry that you're going to be right or wrong. You know, it's okay to not do a perfect analysis. You're not solving a quadratic equation here. If someone is sort of between two categories, that's fine. This is just one rough way of thinking about their proclivities. That's all. Okay, the second way to do it is to do an internal team pre-wire. And by the way, there's a cast for that, folks, where you sit down with everybody and you show them the deck individually. You could do it at extending your one-on-ones. You could do it, you could schedule 10 minutes during the week. And if you think you don't have time to do a 10-minute sit-down with each one of your directs in a given week, provided you have less than 20 directs, your problem is not change or internal pre-wires. Your problem is priority management. But you visit with them, you outline your draft plan or the idea, and assess their relative support. And this does, it takes a little longer. It may also give you more insight into why a particular direct disagrees with you. Either way will work just fine initially. Maybe you use the first one 3 or 4 times, and then you realize for a really big change that's coming, you're going to do an internal pre-wire, and that's fine.
Okay. Now that we understand where everybody is, more than likely we're going to find some people who fall into the camp of naysayers. And so we're going to spend a lot of time with them, right?
No.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You should be writing these.
I should. The anti-manager tools.
I mean, I'm serious. You are all over it.
Because that's what we do. We spend time with people.
Knowing where your supporters and your naysayers are lets you avoid the big rookie mistake we mentioned earlier, which is getting everybody completely on board. You're not going to try to do that. Now that we know who the naysayers are, we're going to spend less time with them, because that time is unlikely to convert them. And every minute we spend with them is a minute not spent thanking a supporter, encouraging a supporter, or even encouraging a writer to become a supporter. Now look, I think I said this before, we're not going to completely ignore the naysayers. Everyone, them.
You're dead to me.
Exactly. Right? You're dead to me. Everyone, even naysayers, gets briefed on progress. You don't disinvite naysayers to meetings. You take their questions when their questions aren't thinly veiled attacks. And I'll tell you, that's something we'll do a podcast on at some point in the next 10, 20 years, which is, what do you do when somebody just nakedly attacks an idea in the veil of a question? And actually, that cast will be called Squash Them Like a Bug. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Because, you know, it's funny how people think, oh, we should be professional, until I don't want to be professional. So when an naysayer asks a question, take their question, okay? But on the other hand, don't ask them to serve on the implementation team. Don't ask them to present the ideas to others to get them on board, okay? Don't think, okay, Bob is a 10 on a 10 in terms of the supporter scale. Joe is a 3. I think he's a naysayer. And so therefore, I'm going to go have a special meeting with Joe each week trying to win him over. You don't do that. Okay. You recognize that not every change will be liked by every single person. And really what you need is to minimize the impact of the naysayers. Don't think of everyone as having one vote. Okay. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot, and so I'll say it in a cast for the first time. The time you would spend on those naysayers would be wasted, because your time is limited, folks, and any time better spent elsewhere is wasted to a manager or a professional who has high standards and has a lot to do. When you have a ton to do and you're not going to get it all done, it doesn't do any good to do something, to work on something, which technically is a responsibility, which will not deliver anywhere near the results of something else. You're violating a principle. And what most people say when they're working on something that's priority 17 is, hey, this is one of my priorities. Yes, but the moment we have too much work to do, the fact that you are working on a priority is irrelevant. We now expect you to have judgment to work on the most important priorities. We expect you to wring every valuable minute, valuable result out of your time that you possibly can. So you're wasting time spending a good deal more than a basic amount on a naysayer, because you're taking time away from supporters. And pretty soon it's going to feel like to your top people that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And suddenly you'll have nothing but naysayers on your team, particularly those who like attention from their boss, and you'll have less supporters. So that's the Orkhart.
Cool.
Yeah. So knowing whether a direct is pulling the ore cart with you, or whether they're along for the ride, or maybe they're pulling against you, helps you apportion your limited time in a change effort. Don't try to win over the naysayers, limit their impact, and praise and over-communicate to your supporters, and drag the naysayers along. That's how you do it.
Cool. Thanks, my friend.
Anytime, partner.
We'll see you later. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. Have a great one.
This podcast was produced by Manager Tools. Manager Tools creates actionable management guidance every single week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face as a manager or professional, go to www.manager-tools.com. Search for Manager Tools on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.